From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Hurricane Isaias accomplished what even COVID-19 couldn't do, delayed the start of the new academic year for students at year-round schools in New Hanover County. Traditional schools are still slated to begin August 17th. It was just last month that North Carolina officials granted authority to individual school districts to determine their own education plans for the new academic year, based on the breadth of coronavirus cases in a given region and the individual needs of each district. New Hanover County Schools has opted for Plan C, 100% remote learning for the first grading period. Brunswick County Schools also adopted Plan C for the first 4.5 weeks of the year. And Pender County Schools plans to start with a mix of remote and in-person learning. New Hanover County Schools also has a brand new superintendent coming from Kansas City. But Dr. Charles Faust doesn't actually step into the lead role until September 1st. As school administrators and teachers grapple with inventing a new educational paradigm, they are sharing best practices, learning from each other, and worrying more about at-risk kids. What are the ways educators will bridge equity gaps exacerbated by the pandemic? And what will school look like when kids eventually do return? Will there be temperature checks at the door? How many kids permitted in a classroom? Today, we'll explore some of these questions with New Hanover County educators. Joining me now is Elizabeth Feltz, an English teacher at New Hanover High School and also New Hanover County Schools Teacher of the Year. She is also a service learning teacher, connecting what happens in the classroom with what citizens do in the community. Elizabeth Feltz, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here today.
We're glad to have you with us. Also here, Jean Hall. She is an assistant principal at the International School at Gregory. Jean Hall, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rachel. Happy to be with you.
And happy to have you here. And of course, if you have your own questions about what your child might encounter in classes this year, send us an email during the live discussion this Wednesday, August 5th. That email address is coastline@whqr.org. Jean Hall, I want to start with you. First of all, what does 100% remote learning mean?
Great question, Rachel. And it's a question that I get on a regular basis from parents and guardians. 100% remote learning means that there is no face-to-face, in-person teaching and learning occurring at this time under Plan C. And for New Hanover County Schools, the options that are laid out under Plan C remote learning or online learning would include the remote learning plan, which can and should and does include some synchronous interactive FaceTime with teachers via the web, and the virtual academy option, which is a more self-paced option for students that is designed to be asynchronous without that interactive FaceTime via the web with teachers.
Jean, just to be clear about synchronous and asynchronous, that means that a kid either has to show up online at a certain time or not. Is that what that means?
That is correct. So synchronous would imply that the student and the teacher are interacting in real time with one another.
Great. And so, Elizabeth Feltz, as you put together your teaching plan this year, how are you exploring your options for synchronous and asynchronous learning?
So right now it's a big learning period for me as we're learning new learning management systems like Edgenuity and Canvas. So we're in a big growth period right now of figuring out what's the best practices for building online community. Because if we compare to last spring, those were students that had already been enrolled in my classes for either the semester or for the year. And so I already had those relationships built and had connected with a lot of the parents previously to March 13th. Whereas this year, I'll be starting the school year with a brand new set of students, most of whom I've never taught before in any capacity. So how do we best build those relationships in an online platform and connect to parents? So there's a lot of learning that I'm doing, a lot of training that I'm going through, a lot of questions I'm asking and reaching out to different teachers, not only in our district, but across the state. We're learning from other people who have already started school this past week. A lot of schools around the country started. So just trying to learn the best practices so that way we can deliver a great educational experience for our students, or the best that we can possibly provide this fall.
Jean Hall of the International School at Gregory, how can educators go about getting to know some of these new students that they, at this point, know very little about? What are some of the tools that they have for that?
Sure. I think for our school, because we are a kindergarten through eighth grade school, and we don't have, because of the model of the school, the Spanish immersion model that we have at International School at Gregory, we don't have as much moving about the district as some other schools may have. And so I think it's a little easier for us to tailor a response to that question because we do see the same students back year after year. For those schools that don't have that set up, which is the majority, I think schools are focusing quite a bit on kindergartners because they are coming in brand new, just as a sixth grader would be coming in brand new to a school. And then again, ninth graders coming in brand new to a high school environment. And so I think the schools are focused on, I would say, encouraging a remote learning option so that they can have access, they can have that face time with students, all the while understanding that for some families, the virtual academy option is the only option due to family restraint, their work schedule, parents' work schedule, parents who want to be involved with their child's education. So that may be the best option for them. But in order to allow for that face time, either through the screen or in person as best we can for open houses, many schools are developing a model where students will do the drive-through, meet your teacher at a distance sort of thing, because everyone feels it's extremely important to be able to put that name to a face. The other thing I like to remind parents and guardians of is that this is not a forever thing. I continue to say that, and hopefully I will not be eating my words, but this is not a forever thing. No one wants children spending the entire school year operating, functioning, building a relationship with their school that is strictly through a screen. So I think that each school continues to chip away at good answers to that question and offer as many real-time, face-time options with families as possible.
Elizabeth Feltz, as an English teacher at New Hanover High and also a mom yourself, you probably have some interesting insights for parents in terms of what you as a teacher would really like from them. So if you could share with us what you think a parent can do that would really make a difference in this first term being successful.
Yeah, great question. I think, well, first, schools must support parents. So they need to train parents in how to use these technologies, provide technology if there needs to be, help provide any type of assistance that they can or connect them to resources to help their child. But from the parent perspective, I think it's just essential that parents are really helping set the tone for this educational experience. You know, parents are always such a critical partner in education, no matter if it's virtual, in phase. They are always such an important part of a child's success. But particularly right now, they are able to model, you know, what do I do when I'm frustrated? How do I stay motivated? Staying on track with different assignments, reaching out to teachers or the school when assistance is needed, helping students with their own social emotional learning during this time. So it's critical, no matter what age your child is, that parents are being involved. And if they need assistance, that they're reaching out to the school and the school is providing those supports for parents to be successful, because a successful parent often lends to a successful child.
You know, that's an interesting idea. And I've wondered, with 100% remote learning, even if this is a temporary scenario, should kids have broader parameters for getting upset or unmotivated or frustrated? In other words, you know, when you're in a classroom setting, there's a certain stricture because what you do affects everybody else sitting in that classroom. But do kids need to be, I don't know, taught the importance of discipline? And obviously that's something that you can answer when we come back from this break. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about public education, what it will look like in the age of COVID-19. Some of the new protocols teachers are developing. Jean Hall, an assistant principal of Gregory, and Elizabeth Feltz, New Hanover County's Teacher of the Year, are with us today and answering your questions during this live Wednesday discussion. You can email us at coastline@whqr.org. When we come back from this break, we'll hear from some listeners. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. As public school districts in North Carolina determine their own paths forward amid the pandemic, we're checking in with two New Hanover County Schools educators. Jean Hall is an assistant principal of the International School at Gregory. Elizabeth Feltz is New Hanover County's Teacher of the Year. She also teaches English at New Hanover High School. If you'd like to ask a question or tell us how you're thinking about your own kids' education this year, send us an email at coastline@whqr.org during the live Wednesday, August 5th discussion. And Elizabeth Feltz, just before we went to break, I asked you about, you know, what kids and parents are going to need to think about and deal with when it comes to a kid at home feeling frustrated or unmotivated. Does the parent need to become a disciplinarian? Do kids need to learn more of their own kind of self-monitoring and how to manage their own emotions? What should parents be thinking about here?
So that there's a lot to that. And I think that's something that I hope all educators in schools are trying to layer in, not only virtually, but in their classrooms as well, is how to recognize feelings, recognize warning signs, realizing that emotions aren't actually good or bad. They're signals to us of how we're feeling. And so, you know, when you have those signals going off in your mind or in your body, how you're responding to those in a healthy way, thinking about goal setting, thinking about, you know, the importance of taking a break rather than quitting. All those things are, you know, really difficult even as an adult. I'm still learning. And so when we're imposing that on children, you know, I have a five-year-old son who's starting kindergarten, and I do yoga with my kids to teach them to take deep breaths, because if you can just take a deep breath when you're feeling frustrated or stressed or unmotivated, then it brings a lot of clarity to yourself. So whether it's something as simple as taking a deep breath or something bigger of recognizing your own anxieties, emotions, frustrations, a lack of motivation, and then utilizing the resources that are available, whether it's reaching out to a guidance counselor, social worker. The schools offer so much to students and families to be able to make sure that students are living healthy lives emotionally, socially, mentally, and physically.
Yeah. And of course, you know, one of the things that we've all talked a lot about since the pandemic began is how COVID-19 is highlighting inequities and making some of these gaps that already existed between kids who have supportive families and have means, between those kids and the kids who don't have that kind of support structure or access to resources. And so I want to read this question from Marjorie, who she emailed us at coastline@whqr.org. She says, have there been discussions about funding, perhaps federal aid, to help working parents with the additional unplanned childcare expenses that families are facing? She says, if I continue to work during this remote learning period, our family is looking at nearly $2,000 a month in childcare expenses. This includes one in daycare, two who will attend a local extended day camp program, and some tutoring to help support my school-aged children with their virtual learning. This is clearly not sustainable for most families, including my own. Jean Hall, what would you say to Marjorie?
Wow. Well, my initial reaction to her question first is empathy, because I know that we have definitely had that discussion. I feel that the answer to her question is something that certainly is not made on a school-based level, and perhaps not even on a district-based level, but something that would come more from state or federal government. I have spoken to a few programs around in our neighborhood, around International School at Gregory, that does typically in normal times offer tutoring programs after school. They've been asking how can they set up programs even within the day that would assist students to make sure that they're connecting and getting work done. I can't speak so much to the financial part of her question, but I can say that there are groups in and around New Hanover County, at least, that are working to try to figure out ways to support the schools because they know the students. We know the students, we know the families that are typically more difficult for us to reach, whether it's through a screen or otherwise. And so we're constantly working to serve those families as best we can. I'm sorry, I don't have a better answer for the financial side of that question.
Yeah, and we understand too that, as you say, this isn't a school decision, but just, you know, wondering about what kinds of talks are in the works to bridge some of those gaps. What are some of the groups in New Hanover County who are mobilizing or talking about trying to help meet some of these needs? Can you name some of them?
Sure. I mean, automatically, I think everyone's mind, especially in our area downtown, goes to communities and schools. I know that Dreams of Wilmington is always trying to figure out ways to engage students, which is tough for them because they tend to work more on an arts-based, face-to-face system. Martin Luther King Center has also reached out to us to ask how to assist in that way, whether they want to know also what is being provided in terms of technology, devices, hotspots, Wi-Fi access in general, so that they can really scaffold off of that to know what they need to offer and what will already be provided in some way.
And what is being offered? Is every kid going to get a device, or does every kid have a device? How is that happening?
My understanding is that any child who needs a device will be given a device. International School at Gregory is a one-to-one school, so we have those devices allotted to our students, for our students. I know that the internet access through hotspots has been a hurdle, and I just can only say that I know the district continues to work on having that access. And I know, I have a feeling we'll have to continue to be creative with that, and reaching out to the students from whom we're not hearing. We had a good, I'd say a good experience working through those difficulties in the spring with figuring out which families were having difficulty connecting and finding ways to reach them.
And that leads to, I have a question that I want to get to from Amanda about immersion students, but we heard some anecdotal stories from the spring about some kids completely disconnecting, going off the grid. Teachers couldn't track them down. They just disappeared. And I understand, because this was new, it was created by the pandemic. Is it fair to say that school officials decided to not create super serious consequences for kids in that circumstance? Elizabeth Feltz, can you kind of help us understand how that unfolded during the pandemic and what's going to be different about that in this new school year?
Absolutely. So I think something I've continued to emphasize was remote learning in the spring was reactionary. You know, I was teaching on a Friday, March 13th in my classroom, not even at the end of that day knowing if I was coming back that Monday or not. That decision was made over that weekend. And so, you know, we were suddenly teaching online that Monday. And I think it's pretty incredible what teachers and schools were able to put together within days, you know, feeding families, putting together packets, starting to get technology out, is pretty remarkable and showcases a lot of the strength and resilience of educators and schools. You know, this spring, we continue to hear developments from the state level about grading and how that was going to work, particularly trying to keep that equity piece in mind. And so what then developed from that level was allowing students to maintain their grades pre-March 13th or elevate them. And so, you know, for some students who might have been failing, they might be working to be passing. But if they had, you know, a 95 in a class, you know, that's a solid A, they might say, well, you know, I'm done. And so that was some of the anecdotes that you were discussing there, where students just dropped off because they didn't see a consequence. What's a bit different this fall is it's not a reactionary mindset, it's a proactive mindset. So grading counts. There's going to be some type of attendance policy developed. So what students do online, or should we switch to hybrid later, will count as grades. They will be assessed for their academic achievement. And those things will be at the high school level attached to their transcripts. So I think that's going to put just a different emphasis on student engagement and their motivation as well to be successful during this time.
You're listening to Coastline. It's an exploration of this coming academic year in public education amid the COVID-19 pandemic. With us today, Elizabeth Feltz, new Hanover County Schools Teacher of the Year, an English teacher at Hoggard High School, and Jean Hall, an assistant principal of the International School at Gregory. You can ask your own question on this Wednesday, August 5th, by emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. Jean Hall, Amanda asks, for immersion students, how will the virtual academy be supplanted to ensure they receive 50% in English and 50% in Spanish? or will students wanting to maintain their languages need to opt for the remote learning option? She also asks, when and how will middle school students get their schedules for the fall term?
Thank you for your questions, Amanda. I can only speak for Gregory, so these are pretty specific for international school at Gregory. So with Virtual Academy does have a Spanish component to it, but just remember that that Virtual Academy is meant to be asynchronous. At Gregory, we are looking at that Spanish component and seeing what or how we can enhance that Spanish component. And so that's still in the works. We're all still waiting on the full package of Virtual Academy in all its parts and pieces to come to us. For the remote learning option, that option gives us the opportunity to maintain some degree, and we're still looking at 50-50 with the Spanish-speaking teacher and 50% with the English-speaking teacher for our K-5 students. We've worked that out on a schedule so that the 50-50 model can be maintained, with the understanding that, and this what I'm getting ready to say really applies across the board, no matter the content area, that depending on the grade level, students, obviously we don't expect students to be glued to a screen the same amount of time that we would have them in a classroom on a regular day. And so there are guidelines and best practices which will follow in terms of the minutes that we expect students to be interactive with their teachers through synchronous learning. With the Virtual Academy, again, it's more of a self-paced model. And so we're not dictating a particular set of minutes to those modules.
So help me, and I need to oversimplify for myself, because a lot of, you know, I'm not familiar with a lot of this. And so when you talk about a virtual academy and it's asynchronous, what you're saying is it's basically a program with modules that a kid can show up for whenever that kid is ready to sit down and do that particular installment of that.
That is correct.
Okay.
Yes.
And so a kid could, you know, knock out 8 modules in a day, or and skip 3 days, or each day spend a little bit of time working in the virtual academy.
What I would say about that is that no matter the mode, attendance will be kept. And attendance, we're not looking to ding students on attendance. Obviously, if a family must choose the virtual academy option for their child, they may be very well choosing that option because they know the attendance cannot be adhered to on a daily basis. And we have other ways of maintaining attendance for a child so that that doesn't reflect negatively on the child. In most cases, that's out of their control. And so to your question, there will be moderators who are teacher moderators for the virtual academy classrooms who will maintain the grading system and the attendance. But yes, there's more fluidity there for the student learner when they're on that virtual academy option. And that's what it's designed to do.
Okay. Lynn writes, how does New Hanover County Schools expect to fulfill needs of children with IEPs using remote learning and if parents are working? And Elizabeth Feltz, an IEP is an individual education plan. Is that fair to say that those are for kids who are struggling in one way or another or have special needs?
Yep. So like you said, an IEP is an individual education plan. It usually involves quite a lengthy process to get that plan, sometimes a diagnosis, you know, different paperwork to showcase why a student needs this individualized plan, and accommodations usually come with that plan. So whether they're in classroom accommodations, like, you know, they might need extra supports from a teacher, modified curriculum, or it could be even just for state testing or different assessments that a child may take. So it's really, I mean, the eyes for individual. So it's really for specific students who need extra support.
And so you, just thinking about what you're going to be doing as a teacher, how are you thinking about those kids that have IEPs and how you can help there?
Yeah, so I teach a lot of students with IEPs, or another form is a 504 plan, which is has some similarities and some differences. So really thinking through, okay, how do I utilize our exceptional children's staff to help support me during this time with their training and knowledge to best support students who need learning accommodations? How do I, as a teacher, create my online platforms in a way that is, I guess, adaptable for students? How do I include choice so that students are able to adapt their learning to their own needs or to their own interests? And then how do we ensure that those IEPs are being followed, whether that's if they get certain minutes of time with a special educator or certain accommodations from me? And then again, that parent piece in communication is absolutely essential to making sure that that child is getting everything that they need in order for those IEP guidelines or 504 guidelines to be followed.
Yeah, and Jean Hall of Gregory, I want to bring you into this as well, which we will do when we come back from this break. You're listening to Coastline. What will happen with public education in North Carolina this academic year? Two New Hanover County Schools educators are exploring these questions with us today. Jean Hall and Elizabeth Feltz, tell us how you're thinking about your own children's education. What are you worried about? How would you like to see things unfold? You can email us at coastline@whqr.org during the live Wednesday edition. When we come back from this break, we'll hear from some more listeners, and you'll have one more segment to get your question or comment to us. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. COVID-19 shut down public schools in North Carolina this past spring. Now that a new academic year is set to begin, local leaders are working to create new educational protocols as most kids in the Cape Fear region start this year with remote learning. Jean Hall is an assistant principal of the International School at Gregory, and Elizabeth Feltz teaches English at New Hanover High School. She's also the New Hanover County Schools Teacher of the Year. And they're both answering your questions during the live Wednesday, August 5th discussion. You can email us at coastline@whqr.org, and this is the last segment, so you have just a few minutes left to get your question or comment in. Just before we went to break, Jean Hall, I was asking you about IEPs because Lynn had asked about how kids who do have special needs and have worked out some of these individualized plans to help them with their education, how that is going to happen at home. How are you thinking about it at Gregory, especially when, as Lynn points out, not all kids have the technical ability or even just the motivation to carry that out?
Sure, sure. And I think we can apply your last words there to really just, you know, children in general. I think one thing we definitely learned from the crash course of the spring was how much to expect from children and educators for that matter. Just, you know, what is our threshold for learning through screens and teaching through screens? You know, at which point is it no longer a good thing or an effective thing? And I think we had some really great discussions about that. At the end of the school year, we surveyed our staff and to get their thoughts on that. And you can imagine a kindergartner, a six-year-old, or a five-year-old, that's really, it's a lot to ask of them to sit through even a 20-minute Zoom session. They're very happy to see their friends, and that's a big part of it. The social piece of it is a very big part of it, and we have to devote time to that in those sessions. But to answer your question about EC students, those minutes will have to be reached. They will have to be adhered to. We heard from a lot of our families who early on decided that they wanted, even before we moved to Plan C, that they wanted the virtual academy option for their child. Now that we do have the remote learning under Plan C as an option, they may have shifted gears on that. But ultimately, the onus is on us to make sure that we are reaching those students. And it is our responsibility. And as Elizabeth said, as a classroom teacher, you have those plans in hand. You know what each child needs. And it does function very differently for the elementary level than it would, say, the high school level in terms of who is reaching out to that child and how those minutes are being spent. Our EC team is ready to reach out to our students. They've touched base with several of them over the summer also to know what their thinking is and how they're feeling about it. There have been a couple of requests from our families about paper pencil options. In and out of our EC population, even with our general population at Gregory in the spring, we were doing porch drops. We were dropping things, as I know many schools were. That was not unique to Gregory, because people are just going to do what needs to get done to make sure that every child is being served.
And you know that this is requiring a lot of students, and it's requiring a lot of parents. And I have to say, it's also requiring a lot, it seems to me, of teachers and educators, people in the school system, suddenly having to grapple with all of these things as they invent some of these new protocols. Elizabeth Feltz, as a service learning teacher, first of all, can you explain exactly what that is and what that is going to mean, what you're thinking about in this remote learning era?
Absolutely. So service learning, if you're not familiar with that term, it essentially connects what we're learning in the classroom to what we can do to best serve our community. So in the classroom, we might learn about different issues, whether locally or globally, and then we're identifying ways that we can meet some of those needs, whether it's in our school community, our broader community. So we have students who serve in over 40 different placements across the community, and they're usually matched on their interests. So if a student really loves working with animals, they might get to work with animals. If they're really passionate about helping children, then we try to pair them based on an interest that they might have or potential career path that they might want to pursue. In the remote learning context, you know, it's going to take a lot of innovation and creativity, just like all subjects are during this time. But I think, you know, with students, it's an interesting time where they're really processing a lot of what's happening in the world, whether we're talking about politics, the pandemic, this larger conversation about race and racism. So I think it'll be a really unique opportunity for students to reflect on their own identities and how they can use their strengths and talents to best serve others, whether that's even just in their families, neighborhoods, or on a broader community level. So I'm really looking forward to brainstorming ideas and hearing from the students, because I think they always have amazing perspectives and ideas of how they can use their power to make a difference. And maybe the most important life that they change is their own. And I think that's just going to be an exciting opportunity for me as an educator and for us as a classroom community as well.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about how public education in North Carolina will unfold amid the COVID-19 pandemic. With us today, Elizabeth Feltz, New Hanover County Schools Teacher of the Year. She's an English teacher at New Hanover High School and a service learning teacher. And Jean Hall, an assistant principal of the International School at Gregory. You can ask your own question or voice your concerns this Wednesday, August 5th. We have just a few minutes left. You can send us an email at coastline@whqr.org. And Jen says, my daughter is starting kindergarten this year. She says, we have not had the opportunity to visit the school or have any orientation due to COVID. My daughter is an only child, so this is our first year in public schools, and we're a bit unsure about what to expect overall, but certainly due to COVID. Are there any updates that can be shared for incoming kindergarten students at Gregory? Jean Hall.
Well, I can only speak for Gregory. At this time, we're planning our open house, which will be a drive-through open house, kind of a one-stop shop, where we get paperwork done, completed by parents right there in the line, as well as the device pickup, getting FaceTime with their teachers, putting the names to the faces. That I'm most excited about, that open house night, or it could be depending on the time of day per grade level, because it's really the time we get to get excited and celebrate the start of the school year. And we're trying to keep that as real as possible. I lament with the parent, I empathize. I have three children, two of whom are college age, and one starting a new program this year, and she'll be starting it online, and it's not ideal at all. I answer that question often, though, and my thoughts are very much with the incoming kindergarten student for that reason. And so we do focus on that group, especially because it is their entrance to formal education.
And Amanda asks again, what is the deadline to notify the school of a family's decision for VA versus remote learning? How does this notification occur? Jean?
So the surveys that were sent out by the district is what we are still using to know parents' intentions. At this point, and again, I'll speak for Gregory in particular, but I do know that other schools are calling families to know, based on the timestamp of when they completed their survey, if it was prior to the board's decision of Plan C, we're contacting them to find out if they want to stay in the virtual academy framework or if they would like to move over to remote, and having those conversations with them. I can't state a particular date that the virtual academy survey will close. As far as I'm aware, it is still open. And I believe that each school is reaching out to families.
Okay. Is that something that could also be flexible if somebody makes a decision in one direction, tries it, and decides they want to try something else?
Well, I would like to say yes. Again, that is not a decision for Jean Hall to make,
sure.
But I do see the rationale behind the 9-week commitment that the district is requesting for those who choose the virtual academy. From a planning perspective, it's a bit of a tightrope walk trying to plan where to put teachers to do what. And so that 9-week commitment is just extremely helpful to the school so that they can plan. That said, I think that if we're anything, we're flexible, and especially at this time where we know that people's circumstances could change in a minute.
Sure. And then someone else writes, I have a child who will be starting kindergarten this year, has an IEP in place for neurological and physical considerations. Can an IEP address him needing to have a shortened school day if the traditional day is too long? And Jean, that's probably for you also.
Sure, sure. So as we have planned our days, they are not the traditional length of a normal school day. So again, I'll speak from Gregory's perspective. If that's a Gregory student, my answer to that question would be yes, absolutely. Although with students with IEPs or any plan for that matter, whether they're an AIG student, they have a 504, an IEP, or an English language learner, those minutes will be in addition to the classroom minutes that classroom teachers will be delivering.
And Elizabeth Feltz, I know that one of the resources everybody's been short on is time when it comes to figuring out how to react and then suddenly creating new ways of teaching and new curricula. But are you thinking about the next phase when kids start coming back for in-person learning and what that will look like? For instance, are there going to be temperature checks at the door, and how many kids will be allowed in class, and will they be able to share books and resources? What will those protocols look like?
Yeah, great questions. And those are questions I'm asking all the time because I think that's important to understand of why we, a big part of the reason they chose Plan C for this first 9 weeks is to develop the safest, healthiest protocols for staff and students. And so, you know, those protocols, like you mentioned, for Plan B, should we return, are very complicated. You know, if we have a third of New Hanover High School students come back, that's looking at 500 students. If it's Laney High School, that's about 700 students. So, you know, that's still a pretty large number of people. And we want to make sure that, like you said, the temperature checks or other CDC guidelines can be followed and that we can really think through what's going to best serve our students and keep our staff healthy too, to make sure that those who are working inside the buildings are being able to do their jobs effectively.
Are you worried about that for yourself, Elizabeth? Are you concerned about going into that situation and then coming home and putting your own family at risk?
I think there's a lot of anxieties that every parent and teacher and student is experiencing right now. You know, I really don't know what the world is going to look like in 9 weeks. I wish I had a crystal ball that showed me, you know, that numbers are going down and people are following protocols and that we have a great plan in place. But you know, I think we have to, in 2020, really think about the here and now. And I think they made absolutely the healthiest choice to choose Plan C for right now, looking at our numbers and our ability to make safe plans. And, you know, I'm very hopeful that in 9 weeks, we can have those plans in place and to be able to have numbers go down just for our community at large. I think that's essential in order for schools to open in a safe way.
Jean Hall, as I understand it, not every school has a dedicated nurse. So when kids get sick, when some of them finally do come back, perhaps we'll have to find out on another edition of Coastline. Jean Hall, Elizabeth Feltz, thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Coastline's producer is Rachel Keith. Technical director is Ken Campbell. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org, get the podcast, find it on the HQR app, or tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 2. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.